But that, now we got to use our brains. We got to use our brains. Mm-hmm. That's a little tough, but it's good. I think it's good. It's my opinion. It's good. Who knows? So I know everything out of my. Okay. So we have like this. Right? You are. Second, not second. Parshas Ve'era, which discusses seven. Parshas Ve'era, which discusses seven of the plagues. We're going to focus on the second of the plagues tonight. Dam is blood the first. Friday is the frogs, number two. The frogs happens to be, comes up in many Talmudic passages, the plague of frogs. And we'll see one right now. Here it says, Hashem said to Moses, come to Pharaoh and say to him, send out my people that they may serve me. But if you refuse, I will strike your entire boundary with frogs. The river shall swarm with frogs. They shall ascend and come into your palace and your bedroom and your bed and in your house and your servants and of your people and into your ovens and into your kneading bowls. Remember that. And into you and your people. Into you and your people. Inside. And all your servants with the frogs ascend. So says the famous song. Frogs here, frogs there, frogs are something everywhere. Right? So frogs are all over the place. Now, among the places it says, is that it's going to enter, this is the crucial word, it enters into your ovens. It enters into your ovens. That's what it says right here. So the Gemara has a fascinating Gemara. Difficult Gemara, fascinating Gemara, discussing these words. Tudus. The scholar was Thaddeus, the man of Rome, a great and powerful man. A lot of interesting words to be introducing some rabbi in the Talmud. Come in here. This is what the rabbi said. This too did Thaddeus of Rome teach. He taught this thing. Now, there was a story with Hananiah Mishael bar Azariah. In the third chapter of Daniel, Nebuchadnezzar built some type of statue we'll discuss, and he wanted everyone to bow down. Jews do not bow down to statues, even under threat of death, and therefore they were in trouble what to do. Right? So he says, this powerful person from Rome that the rabbis are quoting, he said like this. What logic did Hananiah Mishael bar Azariah have that they jumped into the fire? They went into the fire, and then they were saved. They delivered themselves into the fire. So it says, they argued a Kal v'chomer. I did not know. M-I-N-O-R-I. I don't know what that word is in English. Kal v'chomer. Minori. I don't know. It's like, no. That's how it goes. So this. They said like this. Look at the frogs. The frogs weren't told necessarily, we'll see what it means in a second, to jump into the ovens. Yet, they jumped into the ovens. As it says, they came up in the house and the ovens they went into were six. A6. And not over here. In Yechesko. When are the kneading troughs to be found near the oven? Because they said that they went up to kneading troughs when it's hot. So if the frogs, who are not commanded concerning saving God's name, sanctifying God's name, they're not commanded of such a thing, and they jumped into the hot ovens, we, Chananiah Mishael bar Azariah, who are commanded concerning saving sanctification of the God's name, how much more so should we do it? Simple thing. The frogs were not told, were not commanded in general. Frogs are not obligated in the 613 commandments. Are we aware of that? None. Frogs do not have to sanctify God's name. And yet, in the simple interpretation, some of the frogs jumped into the ovens. They chose. God didn't say, you frog. Some amount of frogs jumped into the ovens. Suicidal act, according to the Gemara. That's why the Pasuk said it, kneading bowls as well. Kneading bowls means when it's hot. They jumped into the oven. They killed themselves to sanctify God's name. So human beings, of course we're going to jump into the oven to sanctify God's name. That's open to the passage. A law that Hananiah Mishael bar Azariah, these are giants, learned from the frogs. They were in the case of Nebuchadnezzar telling him to bow down. He said, oh, wait a second, the frog jumped into the ovens. We'll go into the fire as well. That's what it says. Now Rashi adds on. Very interesting word. Rashi adds on.
Isn't it worse to desecrate your body?
Excellent. Excellent. Good. We'll get to that in about 30 seconds. Excellent. So Rashi says, where is this Rashi? What was the reason why they were in doubt? They were in doubt. So we have to figure out two things. They weren't sure, and they learned from the frogs. So Rashi says, why weren't they sure? So Rashi, I'll tell you why they weren't sure. They weren't sure because, as the Adidja says, a Jew has an obligation to live. You know, not desecrate your body, you have an obligation to live. one of the, again, relevant to 610 of the commandments, given a choice, gun to your head, eat pig, eat pig. Gun to your head, eat pig on Yom Kippur, eat pig on Yom Kippur. Gun to your head, eat pig on Yom Kippur, don't make a blessing, eat pig on Yom Kippur, don't make a blessing. Why? Because we have to live. So they said, oh, we have to live. What do we do? What do? We have to live. Oh, but the frogs jumped in. We're going to jump in also. That's how Rashi understands. Rashi saying what you were saying. We have an obligation to live, but the frogs jumped in. We're going to jump in. There are two major questions on this, Rashi. One, I expect the four of you to ask. And one, I'm going to give you a digit of credit. He's halfway there. Maybe he'll think of prior to 8:30, 4 minutes ago. Question one. Place just asks. 600 how many mitzvahs do we give up our lives for? 610. What are the three Eliezer that we do not give, that we give up our life for? What are the three Eliezer?
Bowing down.
Bowing down. We'll do the other two just for the argument's sake, yes.
If someone says, kill that person.
Murder and immorality. So if someone says bow down, what's a Jewish job to do? Take the bullet. Or be thrown into the oven. If someone says bow down, be thrown into the oven. So Tyson says, wait a second, wait a second. What's your did you saying? We have an obligation to live. We have an obligation to live by 610 of the 613 commandments. But there's three commandments where you do not have an obligation to live. You have an obligation to sanctify God's name and take the bullet and jump into the oven. So what were Hanan and Shalazariah saying? What do we do here? We have to live. Oh, the frogs jumped in, we'll jump in. What do you mean we have to live here? That is not a true statement in this circumstance. In this circumstance, in order not to bow down to the idol, as you just said, the obligation is to be murdered, be killed, sanctify God's name, go to the ovens. So what are the commandments of the frogs for? That is Tosha's question. Obvious question once you're thinking about it. What was the point of them saying we're going to rely on the frogs? No, there should be no hesitation. Someone comes out and says, jump into the oven. I'm not talking about the frogs. I'm talking about the fact, okay, 610 out of 613.
Was jumping into the oven to escape the punishment, or that was their punishment?
Say it again. Was
jumping into the oven.
Their words are they were delivered themselves. They delivered themselves.
That was the punishment.
Still not sure what you say. I'm not saying you're right or wrong. But that's what you're saying. What was the punishment? The rules of God are.
Now is the question. So that was the punishment. So Nebuchadnezzar said, the punishment for not bowing down to me is go into the oven. But that wasn't by their choice. They didn't jump into the oven. They were thrown into the oven.
Yes.
They didn't do anything on their own. Somebody picked them up.
They delivered themselves.
Boom.
Correct. So now correct. So they did the right thing or the wrong thing?
They didn't do anything. They were passing and tossing into the oven.
But they didn't bow down.
Yeah, they didn't bow down.
And they should not have bowed down.
Correct. So they did the right thing.
They did the right thing. So what if it went from the cross?
Nothing to do with frogs.
That's the question.
Nothing to do with frogs.
Right. That is the question. Tosfos is saying, what is it with frogs? The frogs don't do this. This is one of the three major cardinal sins.
It's a coincidence that Nebuchadnezzar says, you know what? Your punishment is ovens.
Correct.
If he would have said your punishment is chopping your head off.
Same thing.
Nothing to do with frogs either.
Correct. That's the question of Tosfos. Excellent. Good. Excellent.
What's considered a bow?
Ooh. Wow, we got a minute left. It's on fire tonight.
Is that like I bowed my head to like...
But no, you're almost on fire tonight. So this is the question.
Bowing.
Before we get to that, your similar question. Yeah. Tosfos' first answer is, which I thought Charles was saying, the second answer, but this is the first answer. Tosfos says, yes, 613 commandments. The first one, Eliezer said correctly, is don't bow down to a...
idol.
Who said this was an idol? This was not an idol. This is the first answer. This was a statue of Nebuchadnezzar. He didn't say I'm God. When they put up a statue of Putin or Saddam Hussein. So let's say he tells you to bow down to that statue. That's not necessarily idolatry, which I thought you were saying. It's not idolatry. It's idiotic. And the guy wants coven. Fine. There could be a serious permissibility, if that's a word, to bow down to a statue of Putin, and in order not to get killed. You're walking in Russia, and Putin says, bow down to the picture of me. That's not idol worship.
What if he said, bow down to me?
Depends what he's saying. Is he saying, I'm an idol?
So Haman didn't think he was an idol either, so why did Mordecai bow down to him?
Excellent. The Gemara discusses what was, same place, by the way. Tosfos has the same question. What was going on with Haman? What is it? He was wearing something. Or was he wearing an idol or not? Tosfos debates him. Very good. So if you're going to say, which I thought your first answer was, Tosfos is saying like this. This was not an idol. This was a statue. A bad word, or a better word. Honor statue. An honor statue. So are you obligated to bow down to an honor statue or take the bullet? Bow down. Chaim Shavuot said, you know what? I hear, but you know what? The frogs decided on their own, sanctify God's name. They didn't have to. The frogs could have said, let that frog do it. Frog A said, you know what? I'm going to jump into the oven. Why jump into the oven for? So another guy jumped in the oven. Oh, you hold that there's something called Kiddush Hashem. The frog said. The frog goes to Kiddush Hashem. So Chaim Shavuot said, you know what? Looking at the frogs, they were not obligated. They jumped in. We're not obligated. We're going to jump in also. But you weren't obligated. You were not obligated to kill yourself. Because otherwise, we wouldn't need the frogs, as Charles said, correct. If you were obligated to take the bullet, we don't need the frogs at all. This is not a case you were obligated. Answer number one, why you were not obligated? Because it wasn't a real statue. It was a fake statue. Answer number one, why this place so far? All simple Gemara statues. Tosha said that's why they had a question. It came out of the frogs. Tosha's second answer, why it was confusing a minute ago, Charles. I thought this is what you were saying. Not even saying this also. Tosha's second answer is this. I come over to a guy. I say, oh, yes, sir. Bow down or take the bullet. What's your answer? You said 5 minutes ago. What's the answer?
Well,
to a real idol. To a real idol.
To a real idol, take the bullet.
But that's when I give you two options. Option one, bow down. Option two, take the bullet. Let's say I tell you, oh, Eliezer, let's bow down or take the bullet. But you know what? My gun is in the flatbush. I'm going to go get it. Why don't you just wait around and I'll come back and give you a decision. You know what your obligation at this moment is?
To run.
That's what I thought you said before. That's what you said. He threw them in and we're running away. Run! So Tosfos says, second answer was this. It could have been a real idol. It doesn't have those words in it, but that's probably what it means. Could have been a real idol. And in a normal situation, they wouldn't need the frogs because a real idol, take the bullet, in this case, be thrown into the fire, but they had the opportunity to run. Oh, you have the opportunity to run? Then run. And how do I know you had the opportunity to run? Because we didn't learn the story of Daniel yet. But in the story of Daniel, if you read Daniel in the prophet Daniel, where the story takes place, guess what? Daniel was there also. How many people thrown into the fire? Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah. Three people. But there were four people there. What happened to Daniel? Daniel had an hour to run. He said, okay, guys, nice seeing you. I'm on the first train out of here. So Tosfos is saying Daniel ran away because it's possible to run away. He said, okay, that's your obligation. You can run away. Save your life, as they did earlier. Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah said, you know what? I could run away. Yeah, I'm allowed to run away. I have an opportunity to run away. But you know what? Look at the frogs. Did a frog have a chance to run away? Yeah. Every frog could have said, here's the place that we're going to swarm. They saw a sender coming to your palace or the bedroom or the furnace. Got to be honest. If I'm reincarnated as a frog, I'm picking the palace. The bedroom in the palace. That's what I'm picking.
Rabbi.
Frogs that chose to fall on the sword, as they say. So Chananiah and Mishael Azariah said, oh, wait a second. Let's learn from the frogs. The frogs had an option, real option. They could have gone away somewhere else. They decided, no. They sanctified God's name because the Torah wrote it in here. Torah is telling it to you. Look how great the frogs are in Yecheskel. So I said, look great. Okay. You know, there's a concept of sanctifying God's name. I'll do the same. I'm allowed to run away. Daniel's allowed to run away. Legal, 100% legal. We choose another pathway to sanctify God's name.
Rabbi, yeah. Question. Frog is not obligated to live.
What?
We are. The frog is not obligated to live.
Therefore, finish it up. That's genius. Go, finish it up.
Therefore, he can die. We are obligated to live if we have a chance.
Excellent question. I'm not allowed to hug you because you're on screen for many reasons. The Marshal, 1600 Stephen, asked this question. Let's say it again. Excellent, not good. Excellent. So Stephen put me in a good mood. Let's go through step by step. Step by step. Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah are standing there, and two disclaims that they had a doubt what to do. They weren't sure. We don't know the details yet. So Rashi says they have a concept of living. They said, no, well, we look at the frogs. We said, look at the frogs. No way. It's an obligation to kill yourself. Oh, two answers. No obligation because it's not a real idolatry. Or no obligation because you could run away. What did they do? They stuck around for the frogs. So the Maharsha, 1600s, slash Steve Rosen, 2025, has a question. Wait a second. The frogs are standing there and thinking to themselves, the frogs are thinking, we have a choice. We could jump into the palace, or we could jump into the oven and sanctify God's name. Okay, what's our obligation here? As you did, you said before, human beings have a 613 commandment to try to live. Just like you must die for the three, you must live for the 610. If someone comes over to you and says, take the bullet or eat pig, you're supposed to eat the pig. Why? Because we want you to live another day and keep another 7,000 mitzvahs. So how did Hanan Yishal Bazariah, Stephen's question, learn from the frogs? The frogs killed themselves. We're going to do the same. Yeah, because the frogs are allowed to kill themselves. You know why? They don't have the sixth, we'll make up a number now, the 42nd commandment of you must live. The humans have a commandment, you must live. So how can they learn from the frogs? The frogs are allowed to kill themselves. They're at neutral. Yes, sanctify God's name or run away. Okay, but you have no obligation to be alive. You're a frog. A human has an obligation to be alive. How does he do it? That's Stephen's question. So brilliant.
When King Henry VIII was forcing people to accept Yeshua,
yes.
Isn't there a little like a loop that if you're forced to
that's what his Gemara is talking about. That's his Gemara. There's a question in certain cases of you being forced. That's the Gemara that Charles has mentioned. We're not going down that road. That's a good question. Yeah. We're going to basic. The bomb question we have now is, we have two bomb questions. One we answered. One is, if it was an idol, they were obligated. So we have two answers. They could have ran away or it's not a real idol. Second question is Stephen's question. How do you learn from frogs anything? The frogs are irrelevant. They don't have an obligation. So the cheap way to answer Stephen's question, and when I say cheap, Stephen, I'm talking about me. I shouldn't even say it's a Jordan. Rabbis from 250 years ago say this. Two rabbis I found from about 250 years ago say this. They say that obligation number 47, that you must live, is voluntary. It's not an obligation. So it's a nice thing to do. That means, how do you look, Stephen? How do you look at the obligation? Kill yourself and kill yourself to not bow down, and live and eat the pig. How do you look at the two obligations? What's the default position? Is the default position I'm always supposed to live, but these three I can't live by? Or the default position is you're allowed to give yourself up for these three, and you're not allowed to give yourself up for these three, for the 610. That means the guy who decides, I want to be smart. I want to be a martyr. I'm going to fall on the sword and not eat the pig. How bad is that? Are we telling the guy you're allowed to do it, but we also know that you don't have to? You're allowed to eat the pig. Number 47 means you're allowed to eat the pig. Or number 47 is you must eat the pig. If, like most people until tonight would learn, 47 is you must eat the pig, you must violate Shabbos, you must violate Yom Kippur, you must do all these averus, then Stephen's question is a bomb question. If they must do it, the humans could say, we are supposed to live. Who cares about the frogs? The frogs don't
have. It's like committing suicide.
Oh, but if you say the new answer now, according to these two rabbis from the 1600s, maybe 1700s, that no. You know, you never must live. That's not true. Now, you used a funny word there. It's not I'm committing suicide. The guy put a gun to my head and said, eat the pig. So I'm saying, listen, I don't want to eat pig. You do it like Charles said 5 minutes ago. What was your word? You were passively standing. They let themselves get thrown into the oven. They let themselves get thrown into the oven for idolatry. And you can let yourself be thrown into the oven, not to eat pig. But you don't have to. If you don't have to, then you can look at the frogs and say the frogs are good. The frogs don't have to. They have no mistress. Nor do I. What is number 47 you must live? Is it you must live or you can live? That's the question.
You can't commit suicide.
According to this, they want to learn that this Gemara, I don't think we rule this way, but this Gemara is learning you can live, and therefore the frogs are involved, because the frogs can live too. So just like the frogs can live, not must live, they chose death. And I even showed myself, I said, you know what? We can live, not must live. We'll choose death, sanctify God's name. For your question.
Frogs can commit suicide. We cannot.
Well, yes and no. Again, when a person puts a gun to your head and says, eat pig, or I shoot you. When you're taking the bullet, are you, I'm just going to use English right now. Are you calling that suicide or are you calling that placing yourself to sanctify God's name?
Suicide.
Okay, that's what you meant. You're learning, correctly so, Stephen, and most Gemaras, that most of the Talmud learns that you must eat the pig. You must violate chops to live, because living is the most valuable thing. That's what Stephen's saying. But Stephen also said that this Talmud passage is not learned that way. Because if you're right, Stephen, then your question comes back. You can't learn from the frogs. So it has to be that they're learning in the frogs, at least, that it was not an obligation. It's that you can do what you want. We prefer, but we do what you want. Very confusing tomorrow. If you learn this way, hold on.
In Spain, Inquisition.
The Inquisition. So you have to know. The debates, which I thought you did, you was going to ask. You have to know, in Spain, was converting to that religion considered idolatry? That's always going to be there. Every religion is a debate on, right? The Rambam is Islam actual idolatry. So you have to debate. And if it's a real idolatry, then there's a mass exodus.
Well, it was.
But they left.
Not ever.
And so the ones who didn't leave might have violated the law.
Yeah, but a lot of
not defending them.
A lot of them were secret Jews.
Then, okay, we're not going to get to that. You're right. Not going to get to that.
Rabbi, a better example is Portugal. Portugal, they gave them no choice. You convert or you die.
Right. Right. So then it becomes a question, what are you supposed to do?
I'm not going to say really.
Correct.
Then it would be the end of the Jews, people one way or another.
That's God. Because in fact, since you brought up Purim, on Purim, that's what Mordechai said. If the end of Jewish people, that's God's business. We have our obligations. Yeah. If you believe, other people say no, that Nebuchadnezzar's idol was a public display on Chaim Shav Azariah, not clear when you read the Pesukim. It could be he felt for them and he was close to them and he brought them into a private room. And he said, here, bow down. Some say that, openly. It's not clear. Again, as a side thing, if it's a public desecration of God's name, then it could be an alibi to tie your shoes. If it's a public desecration of God's name, then it doesn't apply to only three cardinal sins. It applies to all the rules. But we're not going into all those details. I know we're discussing that.
So my point is that there's many cases of mysterious nefesh where people, for example, if they're inside of our camps and someone says, eat on Yom Kippur, I will kill you. And the guard says, they don't eat, they're not allowed to eat. And he says, you eat that. It's like, I'm not eating. And he kills them. I mean, it happens.
Correct. And in many of those cases, they were right. They were right not to eat. It's a public desecration. You have to know the motivation. That's what we discussed this years ago. I don't know if people remember that. We did this years ago. Maybe my first or second year here. You also have to know there's a lot of factors, including in the factor is going to be the motivation of the guy. When the Nazis telling the guy to eat, you have to know inside the head of a brutal person. Is he doing it for his pleasure? Because I can control you? Or is he doing it because he believes that, eating on your kippah, he believes his God is better? Not necessarily. It's not like the Nazi was a believer in a different God. He's just anti and trying to show you up. So when it's trying to show you up, I don't want to use leniency here. Because either way, but I'm saying the leniency is that if the guy is doing it for his own pleasure, that's a big umbrella. Big umbrella on pleasure. Showing you up, then you do not necessarily have the law that for any little thing you have to give up your life.
Like if there was public persecution, I see.
Public persecution. But the guy is not publicly persecuting because it's a religious war. He's publicly persecuting because he's a jerk.
A sadist,
right. So then the laws don't apply as simple as it sounds. That's why in all of these stories, we once gave a class many years ago about the people who ate non-kosher food in the camps. And I was once by a class, and one of the rabbis said, if you ask the guy if he did or didn't, it's a disgusting question. Because both answers are right. It depends on the person, depends on the genetic, it depends on a lot of things. I've been quoting recently, I think I said the other week, about this Gershon Liebman, who I'm printing in my new Agada, Mirtashem, this year, and a guy's with him in the Holocaust writing his stuff. And in the thing he writes, there are Gershon, because of a concept called precious. What's that called? Asceticism? Is that the word, asceticism?
Yes.
In order to be he held asceticism. Everything that he was given in any concentration camp, 25% he cut off, and he wouldn't eat it. You don't need everything on your plate. The Rambam writes, don't eat everything on your plate. Now, of course, we would assume, but the Rambam's applying that in when I'm going out to eat and I'm on my fourth slice of pizza, right? Because someone else is paying for it. So in the fourth slice of pizza that someone else is paying, don't eat the whole slice. Rav Gershon would sit there, a tzaddik, and cut off. And the guy writing the story writes, I lived because of that. His extra portion is how I survived, because I was weak too. And at a certain point, Rav Gershon told everyone, you must eat non-kosher food to survive. I'm not there yet. And then a little later, he said, it's time for me. I won't eat actual non-kosher. I'll eat like in the soup. What do you call that? Buyas. It's a taste of kosher, but not actual. You know what I'm saying? It's cooked and immersed as a taste, but not itself. And he said, in the end, he never. This guy riding with him says, I ate non-kosher. The moment he said it, I was like, right, I'm in. And but he said, Rav Gershon never ate treif at all. But for the long, but he did it 25% off. He survived the war. He's the one I told you about that he and the guy's writing them. That when the Nazis came, he hid behind the door. It's the same person. I don't believe you here, Stephen. He believed that you, at a certain on his level, not on our level, that you can't believe in kosher yatzimeldi. I have power. He said so. A certain amount of trying to protect yourself from the Nazis has to be done. What's called the shtadlus. You have to try, but after a certain amount, it's you thinking you have real power. So he believed during the war that anytime there was an action with a K showing up and the Nazis were gathering people, he would stand behind the door. Because he held, if I do anything more than that, it's me believing I have power. He didn't believe in building bunkers. No. You do the bare minimum to God to protect you. Again, we're not on that level. And probably of the 6 million, I don't even think there were 15, but I'm making up a number here. But he was one and he survived. And he survived. And he had the, and I have a list of things he did in the camp. And one of them was he cut out part of the food. But how he got long circled to get here.
At some point he got caught, though, behind the door. At some point they caught him.
They caught him. He's in the camps. But he survived.
That's the same analogy.
He survived.
That, like, if somebody's trying to kill you, you should have a really fortunate way to attack back or to protect yourself.
I don't know. I mean, it's a, again, it's a million factors that go into all these things. A million factors. So, and, but Stephen, our three things that we're discussing are, was it real idolatry with Chaim Shalom Zayah? And Stephen's bomb question here is that, wait a second. Was it, what are you called? Is there a general obligation as a human must survive and the frogs are out? Or he can survive and he's in with the frogs? Now, what was Chanayim Yishol Azariah thinking? This is a bomb. When you read this Gemara, the assumption is they're following the frogs and the assumption is the frogs die. It means the frog on the palace bed survived. The frog in the oven by the kneading bowls did not survive. That makes a lot of sense. Now, there are early commentators that say that Chanan and Shalvazaya knew they would survive. The question, what? They knew they would survive. And this whole thing, what's this whole conversation going on? You're allowed to know you survived? Look at the unbelievable part of the story. There's a different Gemara. This was in Sachem 53.2, 53b. This is in Sanhedrin 93a. And it says like this. The Gemara inquires, what happened to Chananya and Mishael Bazaya after the incident of the fire? Article 13 says, for unbelievable, when you're reading Daniel, Daniel ran away. He comes up a lot of times. There is no further reference to them in scripture. Is that mind-blowing? They're thrown into the furnace, one of the great stories of all time, and that's it. We don't hear about them. Article continues. One would have expected that the Nebuchadnezzar would have promoted such highly regarded dignitaries, even higher rank after a miraculous display of their divine favor. But it's not mentioned. So what happened? Gemara, unbelievable. Ketanoi, argument among the people. One says, they died, Stephen's going to love this one, they died immediately because of evil eye. 14, Chazanish states that the human mind has the ability to trigger a variety of natural phenomena that can cascade and eventually lead to the destruction of physical bodies. In the present instance, I skipped some. The extraordinary miracle performed for these three made them the object of massive attention. In attributing the deaths to the evil eye, he's consistent with something he says elsewhere. So according to Rav, the result of them being thrown into the furnace and surviving the furnace was death.
Yeah, I think it was Chazanish. That's Rav.
Chazanish is supporting tomorrow. I was explaining
the one.
No, Rav says they died through evil eye. Article quotes, what do you mean evil eye? Because it says evil eye has the power to kill someone. But therefore, Rav says the whole world was looking at them, they killed them. Shmuel Aimer, they drowned in spittle. It's unbelievable, tomorrow. In the pool of spittle generated by the spitting of the Gentiles who scorned the Jews of Achanetz's threats. So that's not part of the story here, but that means, again, the result of one of the most miraculous, incredible events of all time, surviving. Yechon is what Stephen was thinking. No, they went there to Israel, like Daniel did. They traveled, and they got married, and they had kids, and everything like that. So what happened to Chayes Rav Azariah? After this interesting Kal Vachomer, after they said, let's learn from the frogs, they survived the fire, but they didn't, they two out of three said they didn't survive after that. They immediately were killed, or they went and they traveled and then survived in Israel on their own. But it's an interesting, according to me, fascinating Gemara learned from the frogs that becomes into a major practical law on the laws of when you must sanctify God's name and not. As an interesting thing that I saw is that when they, what do you mean they thought they're going to live? That means they understood that they might live because of sanctifying God's name. They realized there's a good chance God's going to make us live. And they had a question, thinking they were going to live. No, they might have died right after that. But they questioned, we have a law, Rambam, maybe, many Holocaust stories, that before people were killed, they said Shema, famous, and they made a blessing sanctifying God's name. Every mitzvah someone does is a blessing. Will you shake a lulav? Will you sit in the sukkah? What about before you fulfill the mitzvah of sanctifying God's name by taking the bullet, taking, being thrown into the fire, the ovens, make a blessing? Their question was, do they make the blessing? That means they're being thrown into the fire. They figured on step one, they're going to get killed. But they realized that this is a situation where God might want to sanctify his name, and therefore maybe we shouldn't say the blessing, because we don't make a blessing in vain, but maybe we'll die 2 minutes later, and the blessing can go on that. So they say, not that they thought for sure they're going to live. No, they didn't give themselves up to live. That's a fake miracle. If they knew they were wearing a fire suit, they were thrown in, that's not a miracle. No, they knew they might die. Their question, not they thought they were going to live. They thought there's a possibility they will live. Therefore, do we make the blessing or not? It was a blessing question.
A blessing
balatola if it doesn't occur. That was their debate. So we have a lot of stuff on Instagram, in my opinion, on Chayes Rav Azariah. What they learned from the frogs. Do we, in general, have an obligation? Did they survive this massive miracle? Were they obligated to make a blessing? We continue next week.